This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
It's time for Speak Legal, conversations with Community Law Otago.
And Nina Webb from Community Law Otago joins us on the line for another edition of Speak Legal. Morena, Nina, what are we going to talk about today?
Morena, Jess. So today we're going to look at the history of prisoner voting in Aotearoa, New Zealand. So we'll look at why the rules have swung back and forth and how Te Tiriti o Waitangi has shaped the most recent law change. We can also compare how the courts and the Waitangi Tribunal approach the issue and how constitutional change can occur in New Zealand.
All right, prisoner voting. What's the short history here?
Yeah, so in the 19th and early 20th century, some prisoners kept the vote and some didn't. But by 1853, people serving three or more years were disqualified. Then in 1905, Parliament shifted that line to 1 year or more. And in other periods, only certain offence types mattered. But just before 2010, the rule was that a person sentenced to three or more years could not vote. So shorter sentences got to keep the vote. And it's important to note that New Zealand has never imposed a lifetime ban. So once released, a person can always re-enrol, though in practice, many never make it back onto the roll after being removed.
So what happened in 2010?
So in 2010, Parliament adopted a hardline political stance and amended Section 80 of the Electoral Act to impose a blanket disqualification. So this means that every sentenced prisoner, regardless of the sentence length, lost the right to vote. This was a classic tough-on-crime stance, signalling more about political ideology than careful evidence. The change mattered because it targeted short-term inmates as well as long-term. It also amplified the falling off the roll problem. So once taken off, re-enrolling later doesn't often happen, so the civic harm can often outlast the sentence.
Okay, so what did the courts do about it?
Yeah, so Arthur Taylor, a prisoner at the time, and others challenged the 2010 law. So on the New Zealand Bill of Rights Act angle, the High Court held that the blanket ban breached the right to vote and was not demonstrably justified. So the court issued what's called a declaration of inconsistency. But this declaration doesn't strike the statute down. The courts can't invalidate acts of Parliament, but it places formal pressure on the political branch. So other arguments tried in the court also included a treaty-based claim and a procedural/entrenchment claim. So the treaty claim argument failed because the Electoral Act contains no treaty clause, and the courts treat Te Tiriti as an interpretive source only when Parliament signals it or where there's genuine statutory ambiguity.
All right, so that was the courts. How did the Waitangi Tribunal assess the same law?
Yeah, so in He Aha e Pira Ai, a tribunal report found that the 2010 blanket ban was inconsistent with treaty principles and caused prejudice to Māori. So it relied on evidence showing that the reform's real-world effects. So before 2010, more non-Māori than Māori were removed from the electoral roll overall. But after 2010, the pattern flipped, and Māori were disproportionately stripped from the roll. This was because Māori are overrepresented among short-term prisoners. So the blanket rule uniquely hit them. The tribunal also highlighted a structural effect. As we stated before, when removed off the roll after imprisonment, people often never enroll. So this weakened Māori political voice well beyond the sentence. On principles like equity, active protection, and support from rangatiratanga, the Crown's approach failed. The tribunal recommended change.
So why do the courts and the tribunals sound different, come from different positions here?
Yeah, so both of them have different jobs. Courts apply enacted law, and absent a treaty clause, are cautious about using Te Tiriti as an independent yardstick. They can declare inconsistency with NZ Bora, but won't invalidate primary legislation. Then the Waitangi Tribunal is an expert commission empowered to investigate and make findings about consistency with treaty principles, tikanga, and evidence of prejudice. Its reports are not legally binding, though, but they carry moral and political weight because they squarely answer the treaty questions that the courts tend to sidestep unless Parliament invites it.
Okay, so did those findings actually move Parliament?
Yeah, so during debates under a subsequent government, MPs expressly referenced the tribunal's analysis and the disproportionate impact on Māori. Parliament then restored the pre-2010 position, which only prisoners serving 3 years or more were disqualified. The message was that temporary loss of vote might be justified for the most serious offending, but blanket exclusion of short-term prisoners went too far, and crucially, it undermined Māori participation in democratic life.
So what do you think it is that prisoner voting's changed so often compared with other rights?
Yeah, so it tends to be because it sits in the intersection of punishment, citizenship, and political theatre. So parties use it to signal values, to signal they value law and order and toughness versus inclusive democracy. That signaling makes the rule unusually sensitive to electoral cycles. Add the fact that people in prison are politically marginalised groups, and the franchise can become an easy lever to pull unless evidence and treaty obligations are kept front of mind.
So what do we reckon the law will look like by next election?
Yeah, so by the next general election, the government plans to bring back a total ban on prisoner voting. It's put forward an electoral amendment bill that would remove voting rights from all prisoners again. So that would reverse the 2020 change that let people on short sentences vote. The bill passed its first reading in July, and the Attorney General has already warned parts of it, including the prisoner voting ban.
Okay, Nina, so what are our main takeaways from this?
One of the important things to take away from this is that neutral-sounding rules can have non-neutral effects. The 2010 ban disproportionately silenced Māori, and the tribunal named that as a treaty breach, causing real prejudice. Second is different institutions can contribute different kinds of pressure. So, for example, the courts can map out the rights problems, the tribunal maps out the treaty breaches, but ultimately Parliament is the one who fixes the law.
Yeah, and it seems to be continuing to be something of a political football. We will see how it ends up by next election. Most interesting. Thanks, Nita, for joining us for that. And we look forward to future editions of Speak Legal with Community Law Otago. And remember, if you want to get in touch with them, here's how.
Community Law Otago, free legal advice and support for the people of Otago. Advice clinic times are available from the website, communitylawotago.com. We're based at 169 Princes Street. To make an appointment, call 03 474 1922. Community Law Otago, proud to bring you Speak Legal. Check out the podcast at oar.org.nz.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.